Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and a good morning to everybody. This is Rabbi Michael Katz. This is Judaism 101.9 here on Chai FM. It's my privilege, my honor to be with you today and to share some thoughts about this period of time that we're in, the build-up to Shabbat Chazon, which is the coming Shabbos, build-up to Tisha B'Av, which is on next Thursday. And of course, there are special programs, special programming that's going to be taking place instead of this show for the first part of the day on Tisha B'Av itself here on Chai FM. So stay tuned, of course, for that on that awesome day of Tisha B'Av next week, Thursday. But what are we supposed to do? What do we need to know in the build-up to Tisha B'Av? And in the balance of what is known as the 9 days, we'll be thinking about some of those things and talking about not only what we shouldn't do, but what we perhaps should do, as we stressed the last time when we spoke on this here radio station. And just to give you a little bit of background, a little bit of a build-up, as we always do on Judaism 101.9, we go back in history a little bit and take a look at things that have occurred during this time. Now, there's some that are very well known. There's some that are not so well known. So if we take a look at today, which is the 2nd of Av, a couple of very interesting things that happened in much more recent history than we're actually used to on the show. We go usually quite a lot further back to biblical times, to the desert, etc., which we're going to be dealing with in a moment. But when we think about more recent history, well, if we go back to 1929, it was on this day in the summer of 1929 that Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok Schneerson, the 6th Chabad Rebbe, visited the land of Israel. He was the only Rebbe to do so, and the stated purpose of the trip was to pray at the gravesites of the righteous individuals interred there and among the cities he visited. During his two-week-long stay were Jerusalem, Tzfas, Safed, Meron, Tiberias, Hebron, and Tel Aviv. The Rebbe departed the Holy Land just 2 days before the Arab riots of 1929, in which scores of Jews were massacred in Hebron and Jerusalem. Of course, what's new, what is unusual, it was happening then. 1929, date of the Rebbe's visit to the Holy Land. It also marks the date in 1942 of what was known as the Veldhiv Roundup. On the 2nd and 3rd of Av in the year 5702 or 1942, more than 13,000 Jews were rounded up by French police, interred in the Veldhiv, an indoor bicycle stadium in the center of Paris. They were later transported to Auschwitz to be killed, and within days the Veldhiv was cleaned up and ready for recreation, as one does, I guess, when it comes to getting rid of Jews from France or any other country, any other place in the world. And that happened, of course, on this day in 1942. If we just fast forward to Sunday before we talk about Shabbat, and I know that we're not going in the exact order, but following the script of Torah, Ein Mukdam U'Me'uchar Bat Torah, there's no learning of chronology in Torah, and so perhaps we've adopted that as well on Judaism 101.9, just as a matter of bringing perhaps a smile to your face. But if we go forward to Sunday, the 5th of Av, it's the day on which we commemorate the Yahrzeit of the Arizal. He passed away in 1572. The Rabbi Yitzchok Luria Ashkenazi, known as the Ari HaKadosh, the Holy Lion, passed away on the 5th of Av in the year 5332 from creation, or 1572. Now, the Ari, as he was known, was born in Jerusalem in 1534. He spent many years in secluded study near Cairo, in Egypt, and in 1570, he settled in Tzfas, in Safed, where he lived for 2 years until his passing at the age of 38. Believe it or not, the Ari HaKadosh, the Arizal, lived for 38 years. That was his age. And during that brief period, the Ari revolutionized the study of Kabbalah and came to be universally regarded as one of the most important figures in Jewish mysticism. It was he who proclaimed that in these times we are allowed and duty-bound to reveal this wisdom, opening the door to the integration of the teachings of Kabbalah, until then the province of just a few select in each generation, into mainstream Judaism. So isn't that fascinating? His Yahrzeit on the 5th of Av, 38 years old, and you think about the influence that people can have in such a short while, it certainly gives us what to think about. Now, a cute one to think about, perhaps, is that on the 6th of Av is the date on which, those of you who remember, 1969, yeah, not all that much, one might think, to do with Judaism or Judaism 101.9, but it was on this day that Apollo 11 landed on, it was launched actually on the 16th of July. It was launched, and after a successful landing, Neil Armstrong became the first human being to set foot on the moon on July the 20th, which was the 6th of Menachem Av. Believe it or not, the 6th of Av was the day on which the first man set foot on the moon, and what did he say? He fluffed his lines. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, which, if you think about it, means the same thing. I think the brief was to say one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind, but he was on the biggest stage of the world, and one could forgive him perhaps for having had a little bit of stage fright. Now, the 7th of Av, which is going to be on Tuesday, was the day on which the first temple was invaded. The first Beit HaMikdash, now we know that this period of time primarily is constructed, or we think about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, or the two temples, in 423 before the Common Era, after nearly a month of fierce fighting inside Jerusalem, the armies of King Nebuchadnezzar of Babel, broke through into the temple compound. They feasted there and they vandalized until the afternoon of the 9th of Av, when they set fire to the Beit HaMikdash, burnt it to the ground, destroyed the first Beit HaMikdash. Happened Tuesday is going to be the 7th of Av. Then if we go forward to the 8th of Av, which is the next day, it's going to be on Wednesday next week, the spies returned, dispatched 40 days earlier. So the spies in 1312, before the Common Era, they were dispatched by Moses to tour the Promised Land. They came back bearing a huge cluster of grapes, other lush fruits, and even praising, as they praised the Holy Land, of course, for its fertility. They terrified the people with how they kind of pointed to the fact, and they said, imagine the size of the mouths of the people who have to pop these grapes into them. There are giants living there, and the land is unconquerable. And this, in fact, happened on the 8th of Av, which is corresponding to Wednesday, in the build-up to Tisha B'Av, of course, as well. And then in 67, in the year 67, civil war broke out in Jerusalem. Fighting broke out inside the besieged city of Jerusalem between the Jewish factions divided on the question of whether or not to fight the Roman armies encircling the city from without. One group set fire to the city's considerable food stores, and they consigned its population then to starvation until the fall of Jerusalem a full 3 years later. But that all began, or all happened, on the 8th of Av.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. It's Judaism 101.9. It's on Chai FM. It is a Thursday morning and it's a beautiful day here in Joburg, and we are coming to you live from the Chai FM studios, and it's a privilege and honor to be in your presence and to be able to share some thoughts with you about Judaism, some things perhaps that you've forgotten, some things perhaps that we need to be reminded of, and just a discussion around what's coming up and what we need to know for this period of time. Well, we've been looking back in history, and if we look back in history on the charts of Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, which, by the way, has been pointed out that this is Jews 9-11. In a way of counting, we're going into, or we are in, the 11th month of the year, if we go from Rosh Hashanah, although we actually count from the months are counted actually from Nisan, from Pesach, but be that as it may, this is the 9th of that 11th month. of them in 9/11 for us in the Jewish sense. And, of course, there were many calamities, many terrible things that happened on Tisha B'Av, and that's going to be next Wednesday night and Thursday, the ninth day of Av. It's amazing how history continued to repeat itself, but it was on this day, of course, that the generation of the desert were condemned to die in the desert. We got to remember that at Mount Sinai, the intention was that people would live forever. We then made all sorts of tragic and terrible mistakes, and one of them was, as we mentioned just before the break, the spies came back, having spied out Israel when we were about to go into Israel, and they came along with their terrible report about Israel, got the whole Jewish people to sit and to cry. And so on the 9th of Av in the year 2449, 1312 before the Common Era, the generation of Jews that came out of Egypt under Moshe Rabbeinu, under Moses, were condemned to die in the desert. And the entry into the land of Israel was delayed for 40 years. As we're told in the Torah itself, when the spies that Moshe sent to the land of Canaan returned with their disheartening report, which was on the 8th of Av, the people wept all night, proclaiming that they'd rather return to Egypt than attempt to conquer and settle it. God decreed that the entire generation would wander in the desert then for the balance of the 40 years until the last of them died out. And their children, under the leadership of Joshua, would then enter the land that he promised as Israel's heritage. And so this is the first of five national tragedies that occurred on Tisha B'Av, listed by the Talmud in Tinus 4:6, due to which the day was designated as a fast day. And the others are the following. The holy temples were destroyed. The first Beit HaMikdash in 423 before the Common Era, and the second one in 69 of the Common Era. Both the first and second temples were destroyed on the 9th of Av. The first one, of course, by the Babylonians, we mentioned that before, and the second by the Romans. The destruction of the temples represents the greatest tragedy, of course, in Jewish history. It actually marks our descent into what we know as Golus, Gola, diaspora, state of physical exile and spiritual displacement, in which we still find ourselves today. So the destruction is mourned as a tragedy that affects our lives today, although it's thousands of years later, no less than the very generation that experienced it firsthand. It also marks the day on which the fall of Beitar occurred. Now, this was in 133 of the Common Era. Beitar, stronghold of the heroic Bar Kokhba rebellion, fell to the Romans on, believe it or not, the 9th of Av in 133 of the Common Era, after a three-year siege, and staggering number, 580,000 Jews died by starvation or the sword, including Bar Kokhba, the leader of that rebellion. In 1290, the Jews were expelled from England on the state in 1290. It is quite amazing if you think about how things happen, and you think that it's got nothing to do with history, but thinking about England being expelled, I'm just saying, from the World Cup. It was on this day in 1290, that's Tisha B'Av, King Edward I of England issued an edict of expulsion, ordering the expulsion of all Jews from his territory, and the Spanish expulsion in 1492 by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella was also brought into being on the 9th of Av in 1492, terminating many centuries of flourishing Jewish life in that country. So, if we go through and we think about so many different things that happened on this day, we do understand something significant about Tisha B'Av being this day of sadness, of fasting, and of us needing to introspect, to look at what was wrong and what we can do to right the wrongs of the past and bring about a complete change in the atmosphere and attitude of Tisha B'Av in the days going forward. Now, one of the ways that we always think about what we can do with regards to Tisha B'Av has to do with this coming Shabbat. This coming Shabbat, and I'm sure others will be speaking at length about the Parsha and about all sorts of dimensions of it, and perhaps even this, but it warrants special mention because This coming Shabbat is known as Shabbat Chazon. It is the Shabbos before before Tisha B'Av. Every year we begin the reading of the book of Dvarim, the book of Deuteronomy. It is the beginning of Moshe Rabbeinu, of Moses' swan song, so to speak, his farewell departure statement, which goes on right until the end of the Torah itself, the whole book of what we know as Deuteronomy, Dvarim. He is speaking to the generation and now needs to relearn the Torah. It's called Mishnah Torah, a repetition of large tracts of the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu needed to teach them. But it's also filled with everything that happened along the way. We recount all the difficulties and all the problems and all the issues and the frustrations and Moshe Rabbeinu himself declaring that he pleaded to God, Eicha Esa Levadi, how can I carry this people alone? How can I do all of this? Of course, that became the kind of the blueprint of the Book of Lamentations that we read, that we say on Tisha B'Av. But if we think about this Shabbat, not only do we read the first parsha of Dvarim, but we also read the third of the three haftorahs. Now, a haftarah is got really, it's not the word Torah at all, it's haftarah, it's like the word maftir, which means additional, the additional reading that is taken from the prophets. We read three special ones during the 3 weeks, and this is the third of them, and it is Chazon Yeshayahu. It is the vision of Isaiah. And we speak about the vision of Isaiah. It is a vision of sadness and of destruction and so on. But we are told by our Hasidic masters, and most notably so, Rev Levi Yitzchok of Bardichev, who told us that Chazon, the idea of Chazon Yeshayahu, is that it is the vision of Isaiah. And he compares, and we think about the fact that when we were in the desert, there were two generations. There was a generation that saw what happened at Mount Sinai, and there was a generation who grew up who heard about it, who didn't recall it. And this new generation had to be given some kind of a vision. Moshe Rabbeinu was giving them a vision, an actual feeling, a taste of the reality of Israel and the reality of Judaism, the reality of Torah. And he says that so too, the idea of this being a Shabbat of vision is that we need to have vision. As Jews, we need to have vision. We need to put on our long-distance glasses, and we need to look into the future, and we need to understand that the vision that we see, said Reb Levi Yitzchok, is the vision of the third Beit HaMikdash. We mentioned it last week. Why do we call this period of time the 3 weeks and not the 21 days? Yeah, we call the 9 days, but why is the whole period known as the 3 weeks? It's to conjure up in our heads, in our minds, the idea of the number three, to focus our attention on the fact that while one temple was destroyed by the Babylonians and a second temple was destroyed by the Romans, the third Beit HaMikdash, the eternal temple that is waiting to descend, the temple that God promises us, will be revealed to us. Well, we are given a vision of that temple here as we approach Tisha B'Av. On the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av, every single Jewish soul is shown a vision of the Beit HaMikdash HaShlishi, of the third temple that is waiting to descend. Now you're going to wake up in the morning, you're going to say at the time of the reading of it, you know, I didn't remember actually seeing it. I don't know what it actually looks like. Well, perhaps it would be worthwhile to take a look. There are so many things available in books and online and so on, videos, etc., of what it looked like. So perhaps condition yourself, get yourself a real vision of what it actually looked like, and think about it on the coming Shabbat when we're not allowed to use those electronic means, etc., but perhaps even from books we can, and we can take a look at and think about what the third Beit HaMikdash is actually going to look like and yearn for it just a little bit more. Show how much we miss it, how much we need it. As we know, with each passing day and with each passing year, we get further and further and further away from what the Beit HaMikdash was and what it stood for. And so, yes, if we've been in diaspora for 2,000 years, it's a really, really long time. If it's 2001 years, it's even longer, and 2002 even longer than that. And the pain and the suffering and the sadness perhaps intensifies. It becomes even more difficult with the passing, with the passage of time. However, it does mean that the third Beit HaMikdash is just that little bit closer. It means that we are edging ever closer to the coming of Mashiach. We are getting closer to that promised day and time when that third Beit HaMikdash, that third temple, will descend. And it's shown to us on Shabbat Chazon through the Haftarah, through the Shabbos that is named the Shabbat of Vision. We're told we've got to have a vision. Our vision is not a vision of past death, destruction, difficulty, and diaspora. It is rather a vision of great and wonderful things, of peace, of shalom, of unity, of togetherness, of an end to all the scourges that have befallen us in the past and even today, of all the difficulties from neighbors who want to take away our holy land, God forbid, and who are aspiring to destroy us. But a time when everybody will come together to recognize that this is messianic, this is Mashiach, that the Jewish people are whole and healed and well and beautiful and united, coming together as one without divisions, whatever those divisions are. And it doesn't mean there's not going to be differences of opinion. Of course, there can be differences of opinion, but differences of opinion don't need to divide us, and they don't, and they shouldn't divide. And the divisions and the divides are going to be gone, because we're going to be talking about, and we're going to be living in a period of time known as the period of time of Mashiach, Messianic, and it's within each and every one of us to spend the next few days in working out and in thinking about how we can do something to bring Mashiach just a little bit closer through our Torah learning, through our performance of mitzvot, through our unity, through ending faribles, through stopping our nonsensical drive to get involved in all the things that we shouldn't be involved in, all the things that we should, and bring Mashiach just one step closer. That's the vision, and that's the vision we should be aspiring to.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. Yes, this is Rabbi Michael Katz. I'm with you on Judaism 101.9 on Chai FM. It is great to be in your company, and we're talking about the upcoming events or upcoming part of the program of Judaism of this time in the calendar, the 9 days, the build-up to Tisha B'Av, Shabbat Chazon. And of course, Shabbat Chazon is kind of like an island in time in the 9 days, in that we know that while it is the Shabbat, and counts as one of the 9 days, nonetheless, Shabbat's rules overrule things of mourning. We know that if, God forbid, a person is in personal mourning on Shabbat, there is no outward sign of personal mourning. So we steer into Shabbat in a completely different way than these 9 days within which this Shabbat, this coming Shabbos, actually falls. So Shabbat Chazon not only has the vision of the third Beis HaMikdash and of the coming of Mashiach and the peace and tranquility and all these wonderful things that we know are going to happen very, very soon, that we're shown and that we can visualize, but it is also in itself Me'ein Olam Haba. It is a taste of what it's going to be like, a taste of the world to come. That's what Shabbat is always about. And therefore, no signs of mourning are permitted on Shabbos. So on this Shabbat, we do eat meat and we do drink wine and we make Kiddush and we do all of those things and we celebrate a Shabbat, a Shabbos, just like any other Shabbos. In fact, there are some who actually believe and actually say that we should go out of our way to make it even more festive. And if you don't always eat meat on this one, you should. And if you sometimes wear non-leather shoes on this one, you probably should wear leather shoes, etc., 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 and to do things to show that there is no sign of actual mourning in any way on this particular Shabbos. But, of course, eating of meat and drinking of wine is absolutely permitted on this coming Shabbos. As soon as we make Havdalah, however, Shabbos is out. And here all sorts of questions arise about the making of Havdalah on Saturday night and what one does with the wine or grape juice even. And the best is, they say, that you should give it to a child who's younger than the age of Bar or Bat Mitzvah, too young to actually be counted in the morning for the Beit HaMikdash, and we give it to them to drink. If, of course, there is no alternative, one may drink it, according to halachic authorities. However, preferable if you can give it to a child. We then complete the Shabbos and go into the more stringent part, actually, of the 9 days in the week in which Tisha B'Av actually occurs, coming straight after Shabbos.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, it's Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. It's Judaism 101.9. We're on Chai FM. It's great to be in your company. We've been talking about the 9 days. We've been talking about Shabbat Chazon, the build-up to Tisha B'Av and Tisha B'Av itself, which will be spoken about then and closer to that time. And of course, you can hear all about it from your own rabbis and in your own shiurim and so on. And so we're not going to go into all the details about Tisha B'Av itself, but I would like to leave you with this thought. It says, since the Torah prohibits dislocating even a single stone of the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, how could it be that God brought the entire structure to ruins? It would certainly be absurd to imagine that the Assyrians, the Babylonians, or the Romans had the power actually to set fire to God's house and to destroy it, to burn it down. It must be that this was not an act, actually, of destruction. Rather, it was the initial phase of a much greater construction, one that would be eternally indestructible. For that to occur, the temple had to be temporarily leveled to its foundations, and God's people had to be scattered to the furthest reaches of human habitation. But why? Because as long as there is any place in this world that considers itself outside the realm of holiness, there remains a place for the destruction of God's temple. But in our exile, we meet face to face all that considers itself foreign to the divine. We grasp its reins, we extract its poison, and we can channel its power. This third and ultimate temple, then, will be built of the outside turned inward, of darkness taught to shine, of the other converted to the one, of the most sinister enemy transformed to our most faithful ally. No opposition will remain in the universe, and so it will last forever. Then we will all see that, in truth, there was never any destruction. There was only rebuilding, growth, and eternal deep love. And with that thought, beautiful way to think about the impending Tisha B'Av, the 9 days, Shabbat Chazon, the difficult, dark period of time that we found ourselves in itself, has a meaning. And the meaning really is for us to take, grasp it by its horns, turn it around, head it in the right direction. And we can do that through our Torah and our mitzvot, through loving each other just a little bit more, through getting to a state of mind whereby we understand that we can and we do make a huge difference. And we can certainly bring a great amount of light to an otherwise dark and difficult time and difficult place. Let's turn it around, and let's make sure that this is the time that Hashem says, I'm going to take you out of this golus. The time of your geula, of your redemption, has come. Tisha B'Av will no longer be celebrated as a day of sadness and of fasting, but rather one of great celebration, because Mashiach will be here, and the light will be shining bright with the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, a temple in Jerusalem that we hope to be able to see in a vision on this coming Shabbat. I want to wish you a great Shabbat up ahead, a great rest of the week, a great rest of the 9 days, and we look forward to great and wonderful things from Tisha B'Av this year like never before. Just take care, and we'll see you again soon on another exciting episode of Judaism 101.9.